really just trying to do stuff that gets you out of your comfort zone, something that is pushing you to the edge. So this is a core training principle that you get better at stuff when you go closer to what your limits already are.
Technical running is awesome because it requires all of your attention. Like, you can't multitask when you're doing that.
If you keep doing it, you're going to get better. You can't prevent that from happening.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with fun and interesting people with a lot of knowledge that hopefully will translate into you becoming a better runner and maybe even a better human being. If this is your first time, buckle up, lace your shoes. We're ready to rock and roll.
And this month's training principle episode is technical trail running. And we're talking to Ian Sharman, Liza Howard, Addie Bracey, and Hillary Allen. They each bring a golden nugget so that we can learn something, take it with us on our next technical trail run, and become better trail runners.
This episode is brought to you in part by Path Projects. They are one of my favorite partners and my favorite gear. I'm never going to buy another pair of running shorts.
Well, they have the most innovative fabrics and the highest performing materials.
They have a business model that's also unique. It's a 100% direct-to-consumer model. And what that means for you is it's the best prices without that middleman markup. Here's what you can expect when you pull it out of the package. Right out of the package, you can put them on and they're going to be comfortable. Doesn't matter whether you're going out for just a 1 mile jaunt or whether you're racing a 100 mile race or even further, they're going to be comfortable all day.
Hey, they've been featured in Bloomberg, Forbes, Runner's World, and BuzzFeed.
Forbes? Why is a running apparel being featured in Forbes?
Yeah. Scott, weren't you paying attention when we talked about 100% direct consumer business model? That's why they're in Forbes.
You can find all this great gear and you can get it directly from the manufacturer by going to pathprojects.com.
UE Fits, Ultimate Ear Fits, the most comfortable wireless earbuds you'll ever wear. And Scott, I have a lot of them. I've tried them all, and I go to UE Fits all the time.
Let me tell you about how these things work. When they come in a package, they have these soft silicone earbuds. And when you pair it with an app that you download on your phone, the first time you hit go, you put them in your ear, and they warm up, and they mold to your ear. They're custom fit wireless earbuds. There's nothing that can be more comfortable than a custom set of earbuds.
With 8 hours of continuous playback and 20 hours more charge in the case itself, you can be out all day. And that's longer than a day, Scott. That's 28 hours worth of play.
Use the promo code TRN when you log in to ue.com/fits and get your pair of UE Fits.
And if you try UE Fits and you don't love them as much as I do, no worries. Ultimate Ears offers a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott War.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today is our monthly installment of Training Principles. This is the third month that we've been doing this. The first month was on quality training, and the second month was on consistency. Today's topic is technical trail running.
And my take on that, Scott, on the technical running was I'm thinking downhill running. And I thought downhill running was supposed to be easier, but I find it it's a little bit harder. I feel that if there's a chance to fall, it's going downhill, not going uphill. And that there's early in a race, I kind of enjoy a little downhill, but at the end of the race, I'm liking the uphill and hating the down. So this is going to be a great discussion today.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I love trail running is because of the technical aspect of it. There's the going down, there's the going up. It's never the same monotonous thing if you're in the mountains and you're doing some technical trail. I remember, Don, one of our friends that took me out for the first time for a trail run, and we get out of his car and we're kind of up in the Auburn cool area in Northern California, and he says, okay, just follow me. And we started running at a pretty good pace, just on flat ground, nice single track trail. And it lasted for about 300 yards. And all of a sudden, there was a left turn and a steep drop off. And I saw him for about 10 seconds and he was gone. And I thought, okay, is this what this is about? And so I tried to take off after him. I didn't see him for about 20 minutes until he was waiting for me down at the bottom of that hill. And I thought, I love this, even though I wasn't very good at it. And today's episode, we're going to talk about how you can become better at technical trail running.
Hey, let me share a story that I had, Scott, that is similar, but a little bit different. It was on a downhill, kind of clayish type ground and very, very slippery. It was after a rain and we were running along and I was up front and the person that was with me was in the back and he was newer to trail running. And I realized that I was taking a step slide and just kind of getting in the rhythm of the step slide. He was in the back going, whoa, 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 what are you doing? How do you run on this stuff? And I thought, oh, maybe I have learned something a little bit over the years. And it gave me a chance to tell them, have some trust, have a little faith and step and slide. And by the time we get to the bottom, you'll get the rhythm.
Today, we have a fun group of coaches and experts that have joined us. They are all our coaches at Charmin Ultra Coaching. If you recognize that name, that's from Ian Charmin, and he's going to be our first coach that's going to join us. The rest of the coaches all coach for Charmin Ultra Coaching.
He is the leader of Charmin Ultra Endurance Coaching. He's a USATF certified coach, an Ultra Running Magazine columnist. He ran Rocky Raccoon 100 miles in 12 hours and 44 minutes, Comrades 55.5 mile run in 6 hours and 1 minute. He ran a marathon in 2 hours and 21 minutes and a downhill 10K training run in 29 minutes and 40 seconds, which is flying.
Don, have you ever run a 10K downhill training run as fast as you could?
No, but after talking to Ian today, I think I will consider it because I need to do something to make me a bit faster going downhill.
Explain why the heck you would do that, Ian, and what was that?
Well, that is today's topic anyway. It's about downhill running. So yeah, thank you for having me back. It's always good to be here. But yeah, I like running up mountains and I really like running down mountains. So I'm going to talk more about the downhill side of technical trail running, but that was a road run. The last race that I did a couple of months ago was a downhill half marathon with over 3,000 feet of downhill. And I took 8 minutes off my PR, and I've been running for 15 years. So 8 minutes is, you know, you take seconds off at this point, but downhill, you take big, big chunks.
Yeah.
So that was, I almost got 5 minute mile pace the whole way, but after the last mile was just a little bit too slow.
Ian, were you always a good downhill runner? Did that come naturally or did you have to work for it?
I think the core thing here, and it'll be linked to how someone else can get better, is I think that certain sports prepare you really well for it. So even if you're new to running, maybe new to trail running, any sport that you're having a lot of quick changes of direction, and particularly if there's a lot of foot skill involved, and particularly if it's on an uneven surface. So I played a lot of soccer growing up. It is a perfect thing for helping with that hand-eye coordination for the feet just being able to cope with things better. I was surprised actually when I first started doing some mountain runs that everyone else would go slower on the downhills. I'm like, why don't you just bomb down this? And I'd never done it before. And I think it was very much having that soccer background that was helpful. And then, you know, got to practice it more to improve it as well. But for someone who's newer to it, if even just things like running in a city, running on the grass versus running on the hard surface. So it's just a little bit more uneven. And if there's little downhills, you can do that on. Running by the side of the trail instead of on the more buffed out trail, that's also improving your skill for downhilling if you're doing it downhill. But it's really just trying to do stuff that gets you out of your comfort zone, something that is pushing you to the edge. So this is a core training principle. You get better at stuff when you go closer to what your limits already are. So whether you're playing basketball, whether you're playing any skill-based sport, and downhill running is skill-based, or whether it's fitness-based as well. If you're doing a speed session, you have to be pushing hard enough that it provides a stimulus and your body has to adapt. But a lot of this is a neuromuscular thing of how well the brain can judge things so that your foot lands well and you can make a good line on a technical downhill.
So how do you coach this with your athletes that you coach to safely practice downhill running? It's always a concern for me whether I'm going to taste some of the trail that I'm trying to run on.
Well, there's really two key elements to it. One of them is the fitness to go downhill. So if you only run on the flat and then you run some downhills, your legs ache the next day. So that's something that really just more volume of downhill helps. So even if you've just got a tiny hill that's 100 feet, still being able to do reps on that and being able to get in ideally longer downhills that last for 10 minutes plus. I mean, I'm lucky that I've got stuff that can be well over an hour of nonstop downhill running. I can run up to the mountain, the ski mountain here, Mount Bachelor, run back down. It's a 20-mile run of downhill. So, you know, there's not many places you can do that, but that's really helpful. But even if it's a half mile or a quarter mile one that you can do, that's still very helpful. So the volume of it is helpful for both the skill and the leg strength. But the other thing is, like I said, just pushing yourself a little bit beyond what you feel comfortable with. So when we're talking about technical running, that doesn't necessarily mean going really fast. It just means going right at the edge of what you feel comfortable doing. So you're not braking quite as much, and you're trying to preserve as much of that energy as possible as you go downhill. Because the more you brake, the slower you go, plus the more pounding you're going to get on the legs as well. So if you can kind of float over the terrain better, if you're not having to chop and change direction or come to an almost full stop all the time, then you're going to have less braking, less of the energy is being absorbed by the legs. And therefore, not only is that more efficient, and that is very skill-based, but it's also going to mean less muscle damage. So in an ultra, if you can do that, you're going to have less sore legs later on in the race.
Ian, I think you just described what I wrestle with when I'm going downhill. I try to be careful, and I feel like I'm using more energy trying to control myself and stay at a pace that I feel safe instead of just letting myself fall down the hill and catching myself and giving myself permission and having confidence just to go down with reckless abandonment, just to move.
Well, it's not, you don't need to be quite that hardcore. You don't go from like beginner to Killian in one day. You just need to go to the edge of what you're comfortable doing. So if you're going down, let's say it's a 12-minute mile pace, can you push a little bit quicker than that? Can you try and make a little bit of a jump here or not have to brake as much there? So it's really just about concentrating a lot. And that's where you're having the focus practice and your brain, and particularly the connection between the brain and the muscles, is being improved. So it's all about microscopic improvements each time. It's not about leaping forward by a huge amount. And even in just two or three sessions, you improve a lot. Plus, this is a skill. So like any sport, if you don't do it for a while, it atrophies. If you have a winter of not going on the trails, you're going to find that you're a bit crapper on the downhills right afterwards. So you've got to learn it again. But when it's relearning, it's always quicker than getting it new.
Ian, do you think that to push yourself a little bit to that limit or beyond your comfort zone a little bit, that maybe it would make sense to go to some shorter downhill? So don't do like you did and do a full 10K downhill, you know, blitz down the hill, but maybe find somewhere that has, you know, 20 steps of downhill and then a nice flat out go so that you can kind of push it without the fear of, boy, if I trip here, I'm going to be, you know, meters and meters down the road.
Definitely. We're not saying that you have to find a really long technical downhill, just that you have to practice on some technical bits. And that's why I'm saying maybe if you live in a city and it's only, you know, grassy hills or something, do it in the deep grass, do it nearer the bushes, so it's more technical. And even just a small section where you're going a bit faster than you feel comfortable is helping. Obviously, you want to accumulate more time doing that overall, but even just little bits here and there. I mean, if you do a standard downhill on a mountain, it's not all super technical. There'll be bits that are technical that you're going to have to concentrate more and bits where you can probably stop concentrating. The one key bit of advice I give people is right after a technical section, concentrate really hard. The majority of times I see other people and certainly myself fall is after the hard bit because you switch off. Like you're super focused when it's technical. It's like, I can't fall here. This is really dangerous. And then it evens out and you trip on a pebble. That's the only time I ever fall over downhill is on like a pebble. It's never on the technical bit. And it's always right after I've been concentrating and you think, oh, I'm safe now. Don't need to think about it anymore. And that's when you can fall.
I think you're the perfect person to ask this question to because of your success and the number of times that you ran Western States, which is a downhill course and some long downhills on that, not only practicing for technical ability, but also for strength and endurance. So if you're coming from a flat area and you're going to a downhill race, you can really sabotage your race outcome by not practicing and strengthening those muscles and knees and structures that are needed for downhill.
And the best way to do that is by running downhills. So just getting more volume of downhill. So when I get someone near to their peak training for a big mountain race, we're thinking much more about the vertical gain per week and ideally having the same amount of vertical descent as well. For a lot of people, though, if you live somewhere flat, it might just be loads of gain because you can go on a treadmill, but the descent is very minimal. So anything you can do to get downhills is helpful, even if it's like weekends away, plus things like potentially walking with a weight vest to just get a little bit more muscle strength. I have to get that in there. You know I have to.
Yeah. Yes, you need to have a little bell that every time Ian says weight vest, a bell rings and we can recognize that.
I'm sure there's a drinking game about this already with any podcast I'm on. But no, also strength work in the gym, just something, anything that's a bit more powerful. But in terms of improving your downhills, you don't need to do lots of fast downhill running. It's not like you need to go really, really hard. It's fun to do that, and that's the main reason I do it. But you mainly just need to have accumulated more volume going downhill if you can. And also on bits where it's more technical, just push a little bit faster than you feel comfortable with, and that's where you'll get the gain. If you go way too fast, you're just going to fall over. But if you go just a little bit more, then you're better. And the next time you go a little bit more on top of that, and it adds up.
Ian, what are some of the good exercises or gym weight training, strength training that we can do to improve our quad strength so that we're better at those downhills?
Squats and lunges would certainly be a big part of that, but I'm not as big a fan of doing it in the gym if you can at all do it outside. I'd rather do something that's more specific, because also then you're getting the skill element and the coordination. Even if you just run down on a road that's paved, there's still a skill element of how do you avoid overstriding? What angle do you lean at? Those kind of things. So wherever possible, I try to minimize the amount of it that's done with weights. And I personally actually don't do any leg weights most of the time. I do a little bit of other weight stuff just for kind of general core strength and just to keep in shape. But I'd much rather get that via downhills. And any trail runner who's going up and down on trails and mountains a lot is already getting a lot more variety. And running downhill basically is strength work because you're having bigger impact on the leg muscles. It's a more loaded force in the leg muscles, and you will get bigger muscles from that. And it's hyper-specific to what you want rather than a more generic kind of strength training.
But before we leave this topic with you, Ian, I'd like to hear about shoe selection. Size of the shoe, moving up because you're stuffing that foot down using squirrel's nut butter on the foot itself. You know, two socks, give us some thought on shoes. High stack, minimum. I think I'll be quiet and I'll let you answer.
Well, you know, it's going to vary for each person, but comfort is the number one thing. I am extremely picky. Like, there's literally one brand and one type of shoe by that brand that I will use for downhill mountain races, and that's Ultra Lone Peaks. I've just found that everything else I find personally is inferior because it's a very personal choice. But mainly you want something that is a snug enough fit that your foot's not going to move around too much. You don't want a bigger shoe, but you don't want it to be too tight against the toes because you're probably going to hit the front of it a little bit. So you want at least a little bit of a gap there, but tight enough in the shoe that it's not just a loose shoe. Socks, you just, again, want comfortable socks, things that are not causing blisters. I use Dry Max personally, but it's whatever works for you. That will make a big difference. But I say the shoe is the most important thing for avoiding the blisters on the downhill. And the other thing as well, that it's not pinching your toes together too much. So if it's too narrow at the front, then as you go downhill, those toes are going to be rubbing against each other with really high forces. And if you're in a 100 miler, you're doing that for a lot of hours and you're going to get nasty blisters. I mean, we've all seen the photos. We all have the photos of what feet look like after 100 milers. But now I find that because I've got shoes that are perfect for me and it doesn't squish the toes, I can finish 100 miler and basically have no blisters and lose no toenails. And the first few years, that was not the case. So it is possible to do that if you have good fitting shoes that are snug, that give you enough cushioning for whatever your comfort level is, enough flexibility for your comfort level. But that could be a more minimal one or a more maximal one, depending on your preference.
Ian, I'm glad you brought that up, that shoes and socks are a personal choice. A lot of times we get lured in because this athlete or that athlete or my friend over here told me to wear these because they're the best. Or go out and try a whole bunch if you're just getting into this and find out which shoes fit you the best, which ones are more comfortable, which ones cause less damage to your feet and blisters. So I thank you very much.
And it's so hyper-specific that I can have shoes that I'm thinking, oh, this would be great for a 100-miler. And it's working well on 500-foot hills. And then I run down a mountain and I think, oh, these are horrible on this. So you've really got to try and test them, particularly in your long runs, to get a good sense ahead of a big race.
Ian, thanks for lending this information to us and your athletes today that are coaches. We appreciate how you've qualified them. The list we have today, I'm excited to talk to them. They are all specialized and have a lot of great things I know that I'm going to learn from today. So thank you for that.
Cheers, guys.
Our second coach from Charmin Ultra Coaching is Liza Howard. Liza, thank you for joining. Don, tell us a little bit about Liza for those who don't know.
Well, Liza ran the Leadville 100 and became the champion in 2010 and 2015. She has a 100-mile personal record at 15:07. Little side note there, she was nursing her newborn throughout the entire 15 hours. She didn't carry the newborn 100 miles, but she did stop and take care of her motherly duty there. And she is a USTF certified coach. She has an MS in education, a BSN in nursing, and she is the director of Band of Runners. What is a Band of Runners?
We are a nonprofit that works to bring military veterans and their surviving family members into our trail running community. And so we host an annual trail running camp that's free for veterans. So,
where can someone go to find out more information about that, Liza?
They should go to bandofrunners.org. And all the information is down there. The trail running camp is in November. And we are able to bring in just wonderful folks to be mentors to the camp. And it's wonderful 3 days of running in the Texas Hill Country.
So if you're not a veteran, but you have the desire to help that group, can they get in touch with you as well and become a volunteer?
Yes, most definitely. And they can buy a shirt and share the word. And all that goes to putting on the trail camp. And so that'd be wonderful. But for sure, if you know a military veteran that could benefit from being part of this community, be that running or, coming and volunteering at races or any of that, coming in, then share the word with them because we're doing some good stuff.
Fantastic.
The topic of today is technical trail running, and Liza brings her own spin on that. What do you want to talk about when we think about technical trail running?
That you need to find yourself a group of experienced trail runners and latch on to them and do what they do. That the very best way to progress in your technical trail running skills is to get with a group that does that a lot and learn from them, listen, watch what they do, and do that.
And just hang on for the ride, huh, Liza?
Yeah, for sure. When I moved down to San Antonio, Texas, I didn't know anybody down here. I was new to the trail running community, and I was really afraid of kind of, making contact with folks because I didn't know anything. And the Texas Hill Country's, it's got some great technical trail running. People are usually really surprised when they come down here, especially when they come to run Bandera. If they're from some state with big mountains and things, they're like, Texas Hills, but it's really rocky. And so I was really scared to, contact this group. And eventually the word went out that there was going to be a no drop run. And that sounded promising. and so they're like, yep, we'll stop at every turn. No one's going to get lost. It'll be fine. And so, so I just tagged along and I watched and I learned these were all really tall guys, but they were all taking little tiny steps on the technical trails. And when they were going uphill, the steps were small or they'd look for routes around the side. And so, learning how to do that, learning that falling was definitely part of this. It wasn't something, that you could ever really avoid, and you learn how to fall. So it was how not to hurt yourself really badly, like avoid the cactuses, angle yourself away from those, and some of those guys would wear gloves, like leather gardening gloves sometimes, so if they fell, they wouldn't beat their hands up too badly. And then my learning kind of went on fast forward on the downhill running, or did some sort of no drop run, because there was so much joy in running down these hills, these rocky hills for these guys, and they would just take off. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know where I am. I don't have a map. I got to keep up. And so I signed the cross at the top of the hill and just flew down and just learning that one, that it's possible and that it's fun, but two, that, you learn how the rocks stay put on the particular trails that you're running on. I think that was one of the biggest things that they taught me is the more you do it, the better you get because you learn what the rocks are going to do. Do they stay put? Do they slide? How do you manage those things? And so, I think, try and find folks and, people are so nice in our community about teaching this stuff. So just go and learn and watch. And that's the way to do it, I think.
Liza, I love the point that you brought up with these tall guys with long strides that as they started going downhill, and I would assume same thing going uphill, that their stride actually shortens up a bit. And we just talked to Ian about downhill technical running, which he is an expert at. And if you're taking short little choppy steps rather than trying to stride out, I think that you avoid the really hard quad braking issues, right? Where you're, each stride, you're just landing and taking the impact of that entire body and forcing that into your joints. Whereas short, choppy touch steps, like you're just barely touching, floating across with little tiny steps. I love the image. And thank you for reminding me about that. That's a great tip.
And same on the uphills, right? Like instead of, even if you're capable of taking these big steps, if that's what, you know, the land is giving you, looking for routes where you can take tinier steps, that it's just going to be so much easier on your body overall if you're not really working your quads again and again with these large steps. And I mean, I can't because I'm tiny. And so it was really heartening to see like, oh, and that's not even how you're supposed to do it. So,
you know, I remember running with Julie Fingar and she taught me a lesson, but she gave the credit to Rich Hanna before her. So this has been handed down for a long time. And it was running downhill is a dance. Pick your spot and just dance down the hill. Don't fight it. Dance with the hill.
Yeah. And I work with a lot of folks who always will say things like, oh, I'm bad at this. And I think it's just that people feel like they don't see that it's just practice, you know, like, yeah, you know, some people are more talented at it initially right from the get-go and it comes easier to them. But like, if you keep doing it, you're going to get better. You can't prevent that from happening. And so to just, you know, like keep that in mind, like it takes practice. And, you know, if you're racing on a particular course, like to be able to spend time on that course and learning kind of what the rocks do and the best way to, you know, go up and down is really, really something that's going to pay off.
So we're in the middle of a race, whether it's 50 mile or 25 mile, 100, doesn't matter. Running downhill can be something where you can gain some time. But how do you measure that? How do you place your effort? Do you say, I'm really going to work this hill? Or hold back a little bit and realize it's a long race. How do you use your hill strategically?
I think it really depends on where you are in the race. Like you're saying that, you know, in the beginning of a race, you don't want to ever be thinking, I'm working this. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I think it's certainly uphill. I think if you're hiking, then you can push hard in the first half of the race. But that those downhills really should feel like, yeah, I'm recovering on these, like, and keeping in mind that I can't destroy my quads, you know, I need to save for the second half of the race. And that's when I can really have some fun going on the downhills, you know?
I guess you're right. If you're going down a hill, you're probably have just gone up a hill. So you need to recover a little bit.
Most times.
I've noticed the pattern. There's always an up before the down.
Or you're getting ready to climb the hill.
Yeah.
Right. Either finished one or you're going to come up on one. Liza, you part of your whole premise and your topic, subtopic here, is to get with other runners. And you mentioned that when you first moved to San Antonio, you didn't know anybody. There's a lot of people that are listening to this podcast for the first time and maybe considering trail running, but they may have the same fear that you had. Where can someone go to find this community, to find another runner to run with, or if you need to find some experienced downhill runners, what's your suggestion? What do you tell people when they ask you that question?
I mean, I think looking on Facebook for groups, for local running groups is a really good way to go. I think then, you know, going to local running shops and asking around there is good. You know, you all have wonderful resources on your website. And so, you know, looking there as well, you know, and then just kind of looking around on social media and seeing where people, you know, if they live near where you are, and if not, if they can recommend. I mean, I think, you know, to a person, we are so willing to, you know, share information and share resources. And so I think that to just not worry about you not knowing enough or not being fast enough or, you know, talented enough. I didn't run with the folks here for a year because I was so afraid that I wasn't fast enough or strong enough. And it was so dumb. I was fine, you know, and even if I hadn't have been fine, they wouldn't have cared. You know, and I think that, you know, the community's upfront too about like, hey, you know, like we're doing this. And so, you know, if you can't do that, then it's fine. I mean, I think that the people are willing to share kind of, you know, what expectations are for different runs. And so to trust that folks will be upfront with you as well.
You know, another good place to go is a race. Go to a race because all the people that you're running around are probably the same pace as you.
even better, volunteer at a race. Mm. And that's where we get all the data.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been a race director before, Liza.
Yes, everyone should volunteer.
Always plug in the volunteer.
Liza, thank you for your input on this. Liza can be found at CharmanUltra.com. She's a coach there. She can help you become a better runner if you hire her as a coach. So Liza, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Good to see you.
Thank you, Liza.
Same, same. Thanks so much, y'all. It's been really wonderful talking to you.
We're going to take a short break from our training principles where we are learning from the very best out there. We want to tell you about the very best. And that is a company called UCAN, U-C-A-N. It is crash-free energy. What does that mean, Freeman?
It means it gives you constant, slow energy burn, no spikes.
And that's what you want. You're not going to be going out there and want to run hard for 15 minutes and then sit down and take a nap.
No, you need to have a constant, steady effort. And that means your fuel needs to be constant and steady too.
If you want to try this crash-free energy, they have all sorts of products like the Edge Energy, which is that little gel package. They have energy powder. They have bars. They have protein mixes. They have healthy snacks. They even have a hydration mix.
Scott, that is my absolute favorite. And I just love the taste of it. I pour it in a pint glass at home, put some water in it, and there I have some good, good hydration.
And get this, it's easy to order. They even have a club program where you sign up for their MVP subscription package, and it comes on the regular, and you save money by doing that. You can get 20% off if you go to ucan.co/TRN and enter the code TRN20 at checkout. Finally, a third of our Charmin Ultra coaches is Hillary Allen. And Hillary Allen, welcome to the show. And we're really looking forward to your topic today.
Thanks so much for having me here.
Hey, let me tell you a little something about Hillary. You may know her from her Instagram handle and just from a nickname, the Hilly Goat. She's called this because in 2014, she was a U.S. sky running champion. She has a master's degree in neuroscience and physiology and structural biology. So she's pretty smart and she runs very fast. It was 2017. She was in Tromsø, Norway. She was running a 50K when all of a sudden she stepped off a ledge, fell 150 feet down, fractured two ribs, both wrists, her ankle, and her back.
So you're going to talk to us about technical trail running, Hillary?
Yes, she knows something about it.
I hope you learned something from that, and we're going to learn something.
The story's not over.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The story's not over. And so she rehabbed from all of that.
Oh.
She ended up writing a book called the book called Out and Back, and it's a runner's story of survival against all odds. That was 2017 that she fell off that ledge. 2018, she goes to the North Face Challenge in Chile, an 80K, and she wins first place after all of this tragedy.
Wow.
Running 12,240 feet of climb in 11:52, which you say amazing, right? But that wasn't enough for Hillary. She goes back in 2019 and captured a course record. Again, first place in 9:36. She won in 11:52 and comes back and says, I want more, 9:36. She is going to talk to us about technical running.
I don't know whether we have enough time to talk to her about technical trail running.
The intro took an entire podcast episode.
Hillary, what is your spin on technical trail running that you want to talk about today?
Yeah, so my spin, I mean, maybe you would think that I'm not the best to ask, but believe me, I am from my mistakes and all the practice I've had out there on the trails. But my take is that you really have to tune into your five senses to really kind of get into this flow state that I think a lot of people talk about. And it might seem weird, but for me, if I'm finding myself having a hard time running a technical ascent or a descent, I always try to focus on one of my senses. And then that brings me back into the moment. And for me, it's usually sound. I love to listen to my breath or to my footsteps on the trail. And it's something that just centers me and then really focuses me in the moment. And then things just start to kind of click away and flow.
Okay, five senses. Hillary, I'm going to call you out here. Taste is a sense.
Yeah.
How do you figure taste into technical trail running? And I'm not talking face plant eating dirt stuff.
Ooh, I got it. Tasting pennies on a vertical kilometer climb. That's pretty technical. And if you're not, if you're questioning if you're going hard enough, if you don't taste blood, then you're not going hard enough.
Very well done. Very well done. I'm not going to call you out anymore.
So tell us, if you would, how does focusing on one of your senses help bring you back into the race or back into what's important for your performance?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, this is actually something I learned a lot in my accident recovery, but I also used this before that accident happened. But sometimes I can get caught up in the moment and I think about the competition and I start to stress myself out if, you know, I'm not where I think I should be. If I start to think about how far back is the second place girl, how far back do I have to catch up? And my head just, I'm no longer focusing on the race. And then that's when you can fall. Mm. And so it's usually then I have to slow those thoughts down. And a way for me to do that is to focus on things that I can feel, like, okay, how am I feeling? Am I feeling hungry? Am I feeling cold? And then, you know, what can I see around me if I'm experiencing like a low moment, or, you know, if there's a lot of rocks in the trail, you need to look out for them and just be really focused instead of focusing on something else that I can't really control.
You know, I know that my MP3 player isn't one of my senses, but when I'm going down the trail, if I pull that out and I'm trying to manipulate it, find a song, do something, I lose myself. I lose the pain that I had in my foot goes away. The tiredness I have, I'm not thinking about it. So changing my focus completely into something as simple as trying to find a song or move to another playlist takes most of my mental capacity in the middle of a race. And so I really don't think about the other things that I've been focusing on. So I think that's a good tip.
Yeah. And I think also, I mean, I never run with music. So I love to listen to the sounds of the trail. Like I mentioned, my breathing, but also just like your footsteps, because you can notice almost like a pattern and the kind of like a music in that. And every certain trail, if it's technical or smooth, has a certain kind of pattern. And I like to listen to that as well.
Hillary, we've talked about flow on other episodes, but those of our listeners that have not heard those episodes, tell us about what flow means to you and how these five senses play into you getting into that flow state.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think like flow for everyone is maybe a different, but I think it's this universal experience. It's this experience of just feeling in sync. Like you don't even have to like think about where your foot's going. It's just going there. Mm-hmm. You're looking down the trail and you can kind of plan out your movement. You can almost see yourself like moving through the trail even before you get there. I think it's generally, for me, it's a feeling, and it's almost equal to, you know, that runner's high where you feel like you can just keep on moving and you feel weightless and you can kind of just keep on going for forever. And every single piece of that involves a sense. And maybe arguably it's not like maybe taste, but even mountain air, like I feel like has a certain taste and smell to it. And yeah, that's what it is for me.
Can you force flow? Is it something that magically happens and just comes upon you and you just go, woohoo, I have hit the flow state? Or is it something that you have found in your running that you can force or tap into and say, you know, maybe I'm not doing real well right now. I really need to get into a flow state and I need to do these three things to get into that state.
You know, that's a great question. And I think it's something that you can practice.
Okay.
So I think, yes, it just happens, but I think it just happens only if you're not paying attention. There's definitely certain things that you can tap into physically speaking. A huge part of it is just, I think, mindset and mood. If I'm thinking about something on a run, usually a run is a good place to meditate on that. But you have to kind of get past that and be able to just enjoy where you are and be completely in the moment and not thinking about other things that you have to do when you get back home, or you know, some worrying if this workout is going well, you know, so it starts with that mentality. And the more, if I realize that I'm kind of elsewhere, I can bring myself back into the moment. And that's one thing that I can do to then kind of initiate the potential of a flow state. And then from there, I think it really is, like I said, for me, it's really tuning into sound and smell and just a feeling to try to practice kind of getting into it more.
So in a race, regardless of the distance, what percentage of the race do you find yourself in flow and other times trying to get back into flow? How long can you stay in that?
Yeah.
I think regardless of where you're at, the end of a race is usually the hardest part to remain in flow. I remember my last race that I did in Madeira, my quads were just hurting. And so I think it was like every, you know, couple minutes I was going in and out of like, you know, flow state and just like worrying how much my quads hurt and like just wanting it to be over, right? But I would say, I think every race is different, but honestly, like even in a run, I would say there's a huge portion of it. Cause when you look back at a run and especially races, because you put so much time and effort into it, they go by and they go by so fast, but you live like a whole entire life during them. I think that's flow state, because I argue that a race is probably 90% of that, because you have to be so focused in the moment during a race of like taking care of yourself, what you need to do to kind of reach, you know, this from point A to point B, that it's so unique. Like when I look back on a race, I think about it as a whole experience rather than just like little snippets. I think it's harder for me to actually get into like a flow state during a regular run because it can feel more broken up and not like a journey.
Hillary, I'm getting inspired by you talking because this is what I'm taking away from this as a gold nugget. And I just wrote down so that I can have it tattooed on my palm. This flow state and paying attention to all of your senses. Usually when I'm in the middle of a race or a hard trail run, all I'm worried about are two things. One, the pain, and number two, maybe some anxiety because of the pain, right? But if I shift that to some of the other senses, my visual sense, look around at the terrain, look at the trail, tune into my smell. What do I smell with the pine trees or whatever is out there, the cacti? Taste the mountain air if you're in the mountains. And tune into those other senses, and maybe those can overshadow the blisters that are on my feet or the stomach turning in inside. So that's the gold nugget I'm taking away is tune into those other senses that could possibly distract me from the ones that are giving me the problems.
Absolutely. And I think all of that is like practicing and just like bringing you back to the moment, because like, I think that's how you can enjoy something and that's how you can get the most out of it. And yeah, like technical running is awesome because it requires all of your attention. And I can't think of many other things in life that you can't multitask when you're doing that. And I think it's just a really unique thing to be able to practice to be able to do it.
You know, I'm going to add to your golden nugget that you have there, Scott, and talk about the senses, because what I'm hearing is, and you can clarify this and validate it or punt it down the trail. It doesn't have to be just one sense. It doesn't have to be just footsteps. You can have an orchestra of senses, and you can have any kind of recipe you want. You can listen to your breath and how it matches to your feet, and you can start playing with all of these to keep yourself, your mind occupied, of being in the moment, whatever it feels right at the time.
I agree. I will not punt that down the trail.
Good.
Hillary, thank you so much for this inspiring discussion on your take of technical trail running, because I think you're absolutely right. You have to be focused and to tune into all of those senses and get into that flow state where nothing is distracting you. You can focus on the task at hand. And I think that's important with trail running. If you want to learn more about Hillary, go to her Instagram, or you can go over to CharmanUltra.com, where she's a coach over there. You can hire her and be inspired by her technical trail prowess.
Or her story. Go out to Amazon.com and find her book, Out and Back, A Runner's Story of Survival Against All Odds. Hillary Allen, thank you.
Thank you, Will. Thank you.
Now we're going to go into our fourth and final guest, Addy Bracey.
She's one of Ian Sharman's coaches he has over there, and a very qualified one. In fact, she's won Run Rabbit Run 100 first place. She ended up with second at Leadville. She's a top 10 Western States finisher, runs a marathon in 2:35. And not only that, she has a master's degree in sports psychology and has written a book, Mental Training and Ultra Running, Your Psychological Skills Guidebook for Ultra Success. So what a perfect guest for Training Principles. Welcome, Addy.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're talking about technical trail running. What are your takes on that? What are the most important parts that you would like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I found both with myself when I entered trail running and then with a lot of the athletes I work with, that it's some people's like biggest intimidating factor and a piece that people shy away from or are nervous about. And a lot of it comes down to access. I mean, sometimes people don't have access to technical trails on a regular basis. So obviously, you know, one of the best ways to get better at it is to access it and do it. But then I think sometimes people get nervous if that's not the case, if they don't have access, that there's no other ways to get better at technical trail running. And there are. So there's definitely kind of tips and tricks and things you can add to training, even if you live in a city or somewhere where there's not a lot of technical trails, and still improve those skills.
So what kind of things could you do, Addy? Say I'm from flatland, no roots or rocks anywhere, and I'm going to a race, and I'm a bit concerned that I've heard the reputation, it's pretty technical. What kind of things can I do around my flatland to get ready?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the physical demands of technical trail running, a lot of it is like rapid foot movement and foot placement. And you have to have a certain level of like agility almost, not in a way that's extreme or intimidating, but it's, you know, it's just different than a normal cadence or stride length or running on the road where that's consistent. So kind of anything that changes that up a little bit. So when I first started doing trails myself, I would do like a little agility ladder, and, you know, it doesn't really matter what the drill is. It's just moving your feet differently, or, you know, like little quick steps up onto a curb or something like that. It's really just kind of challenging different movements and getting more comfortable with doing something other than just like straight ahead with the same stride length and straight cadence. Jump roping, honestly, can be a really good one.
As you were talking about that ladder, I was going back to the high school football days where we had the old tires lined up on the field, and the coach made us run through that as fast as we could. And boy, that would be a great, great exercise to do.
Yeah, I haven't done those. I just bought the little like it looks like a ladder, a rope ladder on the ground. But I know what you're saying. That one might be a little more high risk, I guess. But so is technical trail running. So maybe you're onto something.
Yeah, I think I twisted my ankle more than once on that thing.
So one of the things that I always wrestle with is how far ahead should I look? I know it depends on how fast I'm going. It may depend on what kind of trail that I'm on. But let's talk a little bit about how far out in front are you looking? Because generally, I'm looking behind me to see what I just about tripped on. So maybe I should turn around and start looking forward. So give us something on how far we should look.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. Obviously, the further ahead you're looking, it's kind of interesting how your brain almost like maps what's coming up and you don't have to think about it as much. It's interesting because I was literally just watching a video this morning on mogul skiing, and that's what they were talking about, is looking like two moguls ahead. And if you do like a similar distance, it's probably pretty comparable. You know, you're probably talking, I don't know, 10, 15 feet ahead of you, which kind of, you brought up another point that I think is another way to get better is I took up mountain biking a couple years ago, and that has helped me become a better technical trail runner too, because you get better at reading lines like you're talking about, especially moving faster. So even things like that, I think can improve like eye to foot communication, I guess. So it's a great point.
When I think technical, Addy, I start to think about risk of falling. Is that something that you have to deal with? How do you overcome that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that fear is what leads to a lot of the apprehension and intimidation behind technical trail running. That certainly was one of my fears. And I think as hard as it is to say it, one way to get over that is to just get not to like make yourself fall, but eventually it's going to happen. And I think once you get a fall,
right,
you know, you're like, oh, okay, it's not, you know, it's not that bad. And that's, there can be falls that are serious, but for the most part, you're talking about getting scratched up or, you know, hopefully nothing serious. And most of the time when I've fallen, it's like, it doesn't look that cool or even that intense. You kind of just like stumble into like the bushes or something. So I think that there's even like a skill to learn how to fall and learn how to mitigate that, you know, kind of roll with it and get used to knowing when it's about to happen too.
I think I've had more serious injury trying to prevent the fall than I do when I hit the ground.
Totally. That tensing up and trying to catch yourself. I've definitely like pulled a hip flexor doing that. So sometimes you just like tuck and roll and just go with it.
You know, Addie, back in the day when I started running, it was not a lot of running vests. They had running bottles. And those were actually very, very helpful. We call them the airbags of falling, where if you're falling, you put those airbags out there and the bottles would take some of that brunt. Now you would lose your hydration and your drink for the rest of the run. But that was a good way. When you say absorb or take the fall, what's the best way to do that?
I mean, I'm saying that, but I imagine myself, I'm like, I'm not graceful when I fall either. But you know, like, there's certain things you want to kind of protect. Like Don said, sometimes trying to prevent it almost can be worse. I mean, a little bit of it's instinct, I think, just it's kind of hard to even prepare. Sometimes you just like, you're always going to put your hands out. So I like what you're saying. I feel like most of the time it's my palms getting kind of, I don't know, scratched up or something, but I guess just like letting it happen and kind of like helping your body to the ground instead of fighting it, if that makes sense, like kind of let yourself roll into the ground instead of trying to like brace yourself too much. I don't know. I think I've gotten better at it as I've done it. It's kind of hard to explain, but I think it's more like gravity's pulling you down, kind of help it out instead of fight it in some ways.
That's great. You know, I'm thinking most of the time when I fall, it's not necessarily on the most technical part of the trail. It's usually after that where it's somewhat groomed and maybe there's not as much of a slope and a little tiny pebble knocks me over. And I think it has to do with attention, really focusing on what you're doing. In a long race where you may be running through the night or really tired, how do you maintain that focus?
Yeah, fatigue makes a big difference. And then, you know, you can't ignore, I guess, the physical side of a lot of us are dragging our legs a little bit more at the end of a race too, and maybe not picking our feet up. But, you know, you're right. When you're in a section that's maybe really technical, it's like demanding such an external focus that it requires that to be successful at it, but it's kind of the caveat, or I guess the hard part of the trap maybe, is that a lot of us, our distractions when we're racing are internal, like the fatigue or the self-talk or oh gosh, this is kind of scary. And when you start having those thoughts, it's pulling your attention and focus internally, which is then taking away that resource from the external like challenge that you're trying to navigate. So when you're in a really technical trail, it's like the consequences of losing that focus are so high that you're kind of able to maintain it. But you're right, there's sometimes this, that's so common, there's almost like a false sense of security, or you kind of let off the gas just a little bit of your attention and focus and zone out for just a second and you like catch a toe and fall. So it's really important to kind of recognize that attentional demand and resource, and maybe when you're falling into the trap of like noticing the fatigue or noticing the self-talk and letting your attention get pulled away from where it needs to be.
You know, the opposite can ring true also. So I'm trying to think back when I'm on a technical part of a trail and I'm really focused, those aren't the times when I'm thinking in my head, oh, this is hard. Oh, my legs are tired. That blister on my toe is bad. I don't have time to focus on that. I have to put all of my attention on the technical part of that trail. So it could be kind of a catch-22.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great kind of snapshot of how attention and focus works. And really understanding that that's like a limited resource in a race environment in which things are kind of competing for it.
Well, I think these are some great tips and great things to think about and put in our arsenal for when it comes time when the trail gets a bit technical. I think it's a fantastic thought starter for all of us as we're out there.
Yeah, I hope so.
Addie has agreed to come on a future podcast for the entire episode and talk a little bit more about this, the psychological skills that it takes to run trails and ultras. So you can look forward to that in a coming episode as well. Addie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your tips and stories on how to become a better technical trail runner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad we had this discussion today about technical trail running, because often it's stops a lot of us from having courage to get out there. And I think of slippery trails or rocks and roots or creek crossings, steep ups and steep downs, dust, dirt, sand, and debris, all the stuff that's out there for us that might keep us from doing it.
Yeah. And you know, if that's your reason for not trying it, take some of the advice from Ian, Hillary, Liza, and Addie and incorporate that and just get out there and try it and realize that you're gonna fall. So the first time you fall, don't go, I'm going to give this up. It's just too dangerous. It's too technical. I can't do it. Because I will tell you, you continue to fall throughout your entire career.
And Scott, you know, you don't have far to fall because you probably have one foot on the ground anyway. So you're already there.
Well, and look at Hillary. Hillary had a massive fall and she's come back from that. So don't let the trail intimidate. Yes, trails are technical. Don't let that be the reason that you're not going to go out and try it, because the benefits and the rewards far outweigh the negatives.
So go out and run.
Technically.
Maz. Maz.
Hey, and one of the common threads of this episode, if you didn't catch it, is all of our experts on this episode are coaches for Charmin Ultra Coaching. And you can find all of them at Charmin Ultra Coaching. The website is charminultra.com. If you can't remember that, click on the show notes. I'll have a link there. That's what I do. I go the extra mile, Freeman.
We have show notes?
Yeah. I'll send them to you. I'll fax them to you. We want to thank our producer and editor, Ryan Warr.
We also give thanks to Yana Gibalova. She's our social media guru.
And Katie Burke is behind the scenes working on her website and doing graphics and support. Boy, she is talented.
Well, I've noticed. I think we've raised the bar a little bit with all this help, Scott. It used to be just you and I.
We also want to thank our Patreon supporters. We want to thank especially our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley at Crumley & Associates. You can find him at DougCrumleyJr.com. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant.